Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I still sound like crap, so sorry about that. So I'll just have Pete talk more this time. Pete, let's play a quick game.
Let's do it.
Of the next three things, you tell me what you think would be the worst part of being sick. One, I can hear my heartbeat in my brain because my head is so congested. Two, going back and forth between always either sweating or freezing and nowhere in between. Or three, confirming everybody on Reddit's Lakers correct and breathing out of my mouth actually.
That's the best part if you ask me. It's a clear winner right there.
I and they would probably agree. but yeah, today though, we have a fun show ahead of you, and I'm all loaded up on DayQuil, so I have as much energy as I can possibly have. We're going to talk about LeBron's true dominance, seeing that showcased for the first time as a Laker for an extended period of time. Rajon Rondo breaks his hand and will apparently get surgery and be out for the next 3 to 5 weeks, so we'll talk about that and what that does to the roster. I want to give a little bit of credit to Luke Walton and his staff for something that they have done and made a concerted effort to get Lonzo Ball to do. And then finally, because you guys asked for it on Twitter and stuff, we're going to talk about this Kevin Durant, Draymond, and then now apparently LeBron thing. So plenty of stuff to get to today. Let's dive right into it. You guys know where to find the show. And today is going to be brought to you by Mazuma. More on those guys in a bit. LeBron, though, so the way I put it last night, obviously LeBron is, in my opinion, the most talented offensive player ever. It's hard for me to say we'll never see it, but I have not seen to this point somebody who can do as many of the things offensively as he can do. But last night, what made me the most excited about his investment into that game in particular was the stuff I saw on the defensive end. And, you know, he basically murdered a person.
Rest in peace, Jake Layman. I was actually very randomly sitting next to his cousin at a fish bar in Manhattan Beach during that draft when he was drafted. And so it's like the second round. I'm like, me and her are the only two people paying attention to it. And he gets drafted and she goes freaking nuts.
Oh,
and I'm
really?
Like, wow, a big Jake Layman fan right here. Right? It's like second round pick. And yeah, she explained it. But yeah, sadly, he's come to a premature end after last night.
But what did you see from it? Like, what stuck out in particular to you from what the stuff that he was doing out there?
There was just an assertiveness about him. There was an attacking, like, you know how we've been kind of complaining on switches. He's always going to shoot that sidestep to his left three-pointer.
Yeah.
And he attacked the crap out of the basket, man. He shot 15 free throws, missed his first two, and then hit his last 13.
Mm-hmm.
And was just super aggressive, had his jumper going. And just like, his body language is just so different when he's like that. And I'd seen it in a couple. So, for example, like when the Lakers are at the last possession of the Dallas game, when he drove to the basket and he got fouled and shot free throws there. Last possession of the Atlanta game before the putback, what got him to the free throw line to miss those two. Like, there are individual possessions where he goes 100%, but that was the longest that I've seen him go close to 100%. And it was just nice to see as a fan, like, all right, I get that he's going to coast from time to time, but one of these days he's going to get to an age where he just doesn't access that. Isn't able to access that to that point anymore. And we hadn't seen him access it yet. And so I was pretty sure that it was still there. Last night was confirmation that it's still there. So is he going to go out in Orlando and play the same way? No, he's not. But I know it's still there, and that's comforting to me.
That's really all that matters. I also think the other thing to take that I took away from it, and you were in the building for this, right?
Yes, I was.
So, I mean, it really came across to me in watching from home. And you can confirm or deny this based on having been in the building. But the Lakers fans really seem to notice, like, oh, this is a moment.
This is different. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, no, vibe. I mean, you heard the MVP chants, right?
Yeah.
Like, he's had mild smatterings of that here and there. Those were legitimate MVP chants for the first time.
That's really cool. That to me, I mean, look, the whole idea of him having to earn respect from the Lakers fans and that all of that, like the notion of that was wild to me and never really made sense. But it was good to see, and it was great to see him resonate with the fans the way that he did last night. When he was pumping his chest and looking out into the crowd, they were going just as nuts as he was, and they were both kind of rising to that moment. That seems to matter a little bit.
Yeah, it does. Like, the thing about, so I agree with you that the LeBron needs to earn Lakers fan respect thing is overblown, but he does need to earn their hearts.
Yeah,
in that he having great moments that he has throughout the career isn't going to invest Laker fans in him in terms of he made me happy, you know, right? What I mean?
Yeah,
and this was like one of those nights where he made me happy with how he played as a Laker, and that's going to be something that it's a little different. Like, I respect LeBron. I've never loved LeBron because he was never a Laker, right? And I thought the world of him as a player, but it's just different to have that type of emotional investment. That's also why Kobe gets so much love, because it was 20 years of moments like that.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a quick second here and come back and talk about Rajon Rondo. He broke his hand, and he's going to be out for a little while. So we're going to talk about, and we'll see if we disagree or agree on what we think the rotation might look like moving forward, and our general consensus about what this might mean for the team right now. So sit tight. Today's show is brought to you in part by Mazooma USA. Look, the holidays are right around the corner, and for a lot of small businesses, this is the most critical time of the year. If you're working in retail, if you're working in some food places, you have to focus solely on ways to grow your business without having to look back at, oh, do we do everything right in terms of with our accountants, with our CPAs or whatever. And Mazooma allows you to do that. Mazooma allows you to focus on your business so that as you head into this holiday season, your business can continue to grow, and they can take care of the details behind the scenes. And for $75 a month, starting at only $75 a month, they can figure out which package makes the most sense for you. Like I said, all their work is done by licensed CPAs, bookkeepers, and accountants here in the U.S. So give them a call at 213-947-6926. Again, that's 213-947-6926 to set up a free consultation. That's Mazooma, your small business's one-stop shop for bookkeeping, taxes, and unlimited accounting advice. So, on one hand, and I think all of this can actually be true. On one hand, there was frustration because we were starting to see Luke go away from Lonzo in crunch time. And even last night, as it happened, as Lonzo came into the game, well, the retort was, well, Rondo would be out there anyway if he didn't break his hand, right?
Oh, right.
And right. So I get that the frustration at a trend potentially appearing there. That said, that doesn't mean the Lakers don't need Rajon Rondo. This is not going to be an addition by subtraction type of situation. And even with that said, though, this is still an opportunity for Lonzo, as you and I have talked about quite a bit, to, and you, I used your analogy last night, and I'll use it here again right now, to knock out the champion. You know, to step up and say, no, I'm actually the guy. I think all of that can be true at the same time, even if some of it kind of goes in the face of some of the other aspects of the arguments.
I totally agree with that. And it's easier to play basketball when you're not looking over your shoulder. And Mark Jackson spoke to this a bit in the ESPN broadcast last night. And I think that's totally the case. I also, and maybe this kind of fuels my fondness for Lonzo, because I feel like people like him are not all that well understood, but I don't think he like plays toward that. And that can be frustrating from a, I want him to take over and like be the man. Like, I think he's programmed and wired to just make the right play whenever he can. Now, there have been times where he's been disengaged throughout, but even in Rondo's absence, I don't expect a certain like jump in, all right, give me the ball, get out of my way type of stuff. But I do think that he will be freer to make mistakes, which I think is important mm-hmm. as a still 20-year-old guy. Especially or I think he just guard. Turned 21. Yeah, just turned 21, you know, a couple weeks ago. Yeah, as a point guard to be able to make mistakes like that without having to peer over his shoulder. So it may end up being a blessing in disguise, but I still don't think you're going to see like LeBron. Lonzo's job is to play off of LeBron, and he's going to get very limited touches as a result of that. And there are going to be nights where he only has a few plays that he's capable of creating. And that is not always going to be reflected in the box score numbers. The last two games specifically, I think he's done a lot to help the Lakers win the game. And that's what I'm looking for from him.
Absolutely. Basically, the way I put it when I wrote up the podcast post for Silver Screen last night, the headline I used was the safety net's off for everybody now.
Sure.
Like there was a safety blanket there in Rajon Rondo, even if people might have been leaning on it a little too heavily. Maybe mm-hmm. some certain people in the organization needed to be weaned off of their safety blanket, off of sure. their pacifier. But at the end of the day, that's gone now. And
right.
and for Lonzo Ball, but most specifically, I think now it's time to kind of step up and prove this is why we've wanted you closing these games. This is why we've always thought that you should take priority over Rajon Rondo.
And he can't have those disengaged nights
no
anymore. Like there's no Rondo to step up and like if he's disengaged, they've probably got to go to a bigger lineup where BI plays point, which isn't the end of the world, but it really hurts the team if he's not, you know, engaged in games. And sometimes that's going to mean he puts up nice numbers, sometimes he's not, but he can do that every single game.
Yeah. What do you think this does? Like, who do you think gets obviously Lonzo is going to get a larger role because he's the lone point guard here, but I don't think this means that Alex Caruso gets called up very much unless the no point guard lineups really seem to take a toll on what everybody is trying to do. Obviously there were a lot of people calling for Bonga. I don't think we're going to see Bonga.
It's too early. He's hooping down in the G League, but I actually like the idea of like keep him with that momentum that he's got.
Yeah.
And like to me, like an NBA call up is too much too soon. It's either he's out of the rotation and then might as well have him in the G League, right? Mm-hmm. Or he's playing, taking a massive step up when he's got a really nice groove going. So leave Bonga be, let him keep rolling down in the G League, in my opinion.
Absolutely. I completely agree. But who do you think beyond Lonzo now? You mentioned Ingram. You don't think Hart takes on a larger role here?
I think Hart maybe gets more minutes mm-hmm. as a result of this, but I don't know if his role changes. I think that we'll probably see a little more Lance with the ball in his hands.
Great.
Kind of like when Rondo was when Rondo was suspended, we saw Lance be a little more on ball, which is really more of a fit for him.
Yeah.
And then Svi may get some rotational minutes at the back end of that. I think they'll give that a shot if he plays as poorly as he did, or at least shoots as poorly as he did in his previous stint. He's, you know, they're going to go away from that. But I think we're going to see a mix of Lance and BI as the first guys. And then if that doesn't work out, or if they have issues with that, maybe a Caruso call up at some point.
The other thing that I'm kind of interested in, and it was something that we saw last night, it had been kind of creeping up a little bit, but last night I thought it really came to full fruition, was KCP looked a little closer to yeah. KCP.
Yeah.
And that development, especially now with Rondo potential, will actually hurt, is huge for what the Lakers need out of a shooting guard position that they, like I wrote it last night, right now the only shooting guard that I feel comfortable with at all is Josh Hart, and even he looks better as a power forward.
right.
You know, so KCP looking a little bit better, I thought, was a really big development last night.
Yeah, I'm hoping it continues without Rondo. There may be some, like, Rondo definitely spoon-feeds him, and he needs to be spoon-fed. Like, if you get KCP open shots, he can knock those down when he's right at a high clip. Is Lance going to be making those passes? Probably not as often, right?
Yeah.
I also would like
to see... Or maybe, like, a dribble late.
Sure, right, which it means it's not as open of a shot as it was before. I would like to see Luke staggering the lineups more. in Rondo's absence. I really don't even know or think that another guy needs to be brought into the rotation. I think they'll try Svi, but I'd be fine just cutting it down to nine and just giving, you know, different parties, Lonzo, Hart, KCP, just more minutes. So, you know, maybe it's Ingram that's running that point with the backup, you know, with the bench while still starting, right? Just coming out earlier and staggering his minutes, you know, in that way. So we'll see. But I'm curious if KCP can keep it up.
I sure hope so. They need his shooting, like, just flat out. They need more shooters, and if he is able to turn things around here, that's really big for their rotation. All right, we're going to take another quick second here and come back and talk about Lonzo Ball and then Kevin Durant / Draymond / LeBron. Hang tight. All right. So one thing that and you know, Luke has taken a lot of crap for rotations, starting lineups. By the way, we both agree that the starting lineup probably needs to change at this point.
I mean, they're not going to change it while they're on a winning streak. That's always what I suspected would happen, right? Is that that lineup does not work particularly well together. They're going to improve. And there's in the second half, they were good, right? In the third quarter, the run that they got was good. But I think their numbers are still negative. I haven't looked since last night. But yeah, ultimately I think that unit's going to struggle over the long haul. I'm not holding my breath on that till December, really, at the earliest.
But one thing though that I do think Luke deserves credit for was trying to find some way to ignite Lonzo, some way to get him engaged more consistently than he has been recently. And what he basically turned Lonzo into, and I called him a Roomba, basically.
Yes, I love that.
On offense, he just kind of bounces around looking for stuff to hit. And yes. It's incredible. But it's worked out really well.
Anthony, that's some of your finest work. I love that so much. That is so accurate. Yeah, man, they're using him as a screener all over the place. I just did this video on LeBron's huge night last night, and Lonzo's fingerprints are all over so many of those plays with those 3-1 pick and rolls, with some of the off-ball screens. Like, he had a back screen on Kuzma on a UCLA cut out of those 1-4 high sets where LeBron hit Kuz for a layup. There are just plays like that. There was even one by Ingram, which he rarely ever does, set a pin screen for Lonzo. It's like, oh crap, are the kids starting to figure out how to screen and how to get each other open, rather not on set plays, but just like, oh hey, if I do this, that means my buddy is open behind me, right? Like, little plays like that are Luke, that's something Lonzo's always been pretty good at, but Luke has been involving him more in that in the last two games especially, and I think we've seen a lot of the positive results. I also think it helps Lonzo be engaged even though he doesn't have the ball in his hands. We'd seen too much of Lonzo standing in the corner, and I think that using him as a Roomba is absolutely the perfect description and the right way to use him when he has the ball in his hands less.
I liked his quote. He talked about it at practice, and he said that teams are put in this really tough spot where either if they switch, you can't guard LeBron with a point guard. That's not going to work out very well. Nope. If they try to sag off of LeBron, especially lately, they can't really do that because LeBron is now shooting the way that he normally shoots, right? He's now progressed to the mean. He started out there really cold, especially off of the dribble. And I believe heading into or after last night, he's hit something like 15 or 16 of his last 35 three-pointers. That makes the defense have to they can't just go into straight drop coverage. And if they both try to trap LeBron, well, one thing, good luck trying to trap LeBron. He's going to make the right pass anyway. And if they do send two people at him, though, that means Lonzo has the ball now in a 4-on-3 kind of situation.
100%. 100%.
It's great. It works out, man. Really well.
It really is, and it's something that's what I've always meant about using Lonzo as a secondary creator in the half-court situations. LeBron is the guy who compromises the defense in that circumstance, right? He draws the second defender, and now you get the ball to Lonzo in a 4-on-3 scenario where the defense is smart. Lonzo's going to be that guy that they don't guard, but you have to step up on him just a little bit, or it's a layup at the rim. Even if it's contesting at the rim, he'll dump that off to somebody else, right? So it's something that it puts Lonzo in a position where he doesn't have to be the one who compromises the defense, yeah, but he can use his wonderful passing instincts in, yep, those situations when it's already compromised.
Absolutely. Yeah, he's not the kind of player right now that you can just give the ball to and say go. He's just, he doesn't have the finishing ability to keep the defense honest on his way to the basket. He can't really shoot off of the dribble. If the player that you're watching takes a shot off the dribble and you go, whoa, then that's probably not a great sign, a sign about what they're able to do off of the dribble. So he can't really, like you said, compromise the defense. And now giving him a compromised defense, though, that's how you use him. And yes, and this is what you and I talked about. Was it, yeah, the last show that you and I had, where it was just finding out little ways to make it work, little positives along the way to continue to build off of after you set a foundation. And this is one of those little things that we kind of alluded to there, and then we saw it over the last couple of games. And I don't know how a defense really adjusts to it. This is a tough one. I mean, if Lonzo continues to be a willing screener, because this is the other thing I think he deserves a lot of credit for, he's setting good screens.
Yeah.
He's hitting people.
Yeah. I think what ends up happening is defenses will try and put a wing on Lonzo, mm-hmm, and then put their guard on someone else. But if that's Ingram or Kuzma, yeah, right, there's a different mismatch, you know, elsewhere, right?
Right.
And that's something like you said, they're like adding little, like Kuzma's cutting was the first thing off of LeBron, was the first thing that was like, oh, this vibes well with him. I feel like Lonzo's screen setting for him is the next little thing that they've found. And they're going to find something for Ingram. They're going to find something for Josh Hart. Things like that are going to eventually just work their way into the repertoire, to the point where, like I said this on the last show, right, where by January, February and later, and this is the thing, we got LeBron for at least 3 years, right?
Yeah.
So these things are going to continue to build off of each other. Like, these things work in these situations with these guys, and I'm really excited. I feel like they're, you know, really right on pace with where they should be in that respect.
That was a great win last night. And you yeah, talked about adding little things over the next 3 years or so. I guess Kevin Durant counts as a little thing. Would that count?
Yeah, you know.
So by now, if you guys are living under a rock, I'll try to summarize it. Draymond called Durant a female dog, basically, and Durant did not like that, and that was because Draymond did not pass the ball to Durant while they were trying to avoid going to overtime against the Clippers. The Warriors suspend Draymond for a game. And then Draymond today, at the time we were recording this, gave his statement. Did you hear what he said about this stuff?
I only saw a clip of it. So no, I didn't see. I heard it was long. I didn't hear the whole thing.
It was about 2.5 minutes long, and it was not an apology. It was a, this is who I am. And more often than not, it's a net positive. Maybe in this instance, it was a net negative. And so it just doesn't look good for those who are hoping that Durant stays in Golden State. And I'll throw it back to a rumor that Stephen A. Smith floated out there last year at the time that the Lakers, I think, either were about to or just added LeBron, that he reached out to Kevin Durant and sent a text and said, hey, you should consider coming down here. And then Durant vehemently denied it. I didn't buy the denial, because it's just wild to me that Durant would never reach out.
Right.
That's not how the NBA works.
Yeah.
And then so finally, to bring this all full circle, Brian Windhorst writes an article about how Kevin Durant is now the most powerful man in the NBA because of his impending free agent decision. And right, in it, he has a throwaway line there where he alludes to LeBron reaching out to Durant this last summer. And so my question to you, Pete, is, are you concerned that Durant being a Laker hinders Svi's development?
Yeah, it's just another guy for Svi to conquer, but I have faith, baby. I have faith. Yeah, man, this is how dynasties end.
Yeah.
And it's funny, because it's either in basketball or if you're a history buff, like, you know, sometimes there's an outside invading force that takes you over. Most of the time you're weakened from within.
Yeah.
And this is, it's hard, man. It's hard being in a relationship with one person. And these guys spend more time around each other than most people do with their spouses. Mm-hmm. With multiple people, right? That you did not necessarily choose to be in a relationship with, although Durant did, right? By going to the Warriors. But, you know, you get tired of people, man, and you want different things. And the one thing I'll say about Durant and that whole situation is the one retort that you see from across the NBA is, if Durant doesn't like being in Golden State and not being perceived as the man, or Draymond is too domineering, why the hell is he going to go to be LeBron James's number two, and then LeBron can be domineering too, right? Like, why would he do that? Why not just go to New York and have your own team? I don't know Durant. I don't know his motivations. I don't have any sources or anything that, you know, have any inside information. What I will say is, if I was Kevin Durant, I would love to win a title this year, then join forces with LeBron and or any team that it, where I would be able to beat Golden State the next year and be like, yo, MFers, I was the difference.
Yeah.
And then, you know, with the LeBron's about to turn 34 in about a month, it would not take very long for Kevin Durant to be the number one guy on this team if he wouldn't be the leading scorer from day one, which he very well might be. And to be able to win, what, it'd be what, five titles in a row, or, you know, three titles in a row in Golden State, and then the fourth title, you know, one or two more in L.A., you know, you start putting together a pretty good conversation, even though in terms of where you rank all time, and you get to kind of stick it to these guys who didn't respect you enough. So that is my, you know, glass half full Laker take. But I never thought Durant was as, and you know, you and I have talked about this offline, I never thought it was as far fetched as, you know, as many people did. And I think we're starting to see some of the reasons why.
I think that the main difference here between joining up with LeBron and joining up with the Warriors previously is that that group that Durant was joining up with was organic. That was a natural growth. They drafted all those guys. Steph was drafted. Draymond was drafted. Klay was drafted. And there's just a different closeness tied to with fans to those guys. Yeah. And that's not there with LeBron and the Lakers. That's not to say that Laker fans don't like LeBron or anything like that, but just that the dynamic would be different. It would be different, and it's something that he's a lot more capable of kind of controlling the narrative with.
Right. It goes back to what I was saying earlier about LeBron needs to win Laker fans' hearts, even if he has their respect. Even, you know, who knows how the rest of this year goes, but there's not going to be, it's not joining Kobe in LA, right? It's not even joining Steph in Golden State. Those guys have their fans' hearts. Mm-hmm. And joining LeBron in year two to be the guy that teams up to take down the dynastic Warriors and leave while leaving them to beat, you know, like it's great. It's like Shakespearean almost, right? Yeah. Like the guy leaves and comes back to try to defeat them, right? Like at the end of it, you know, that I think Durant can win that narrative in ways that I don't think people see when they just be like, oh, he's just teaming up with LeBron. He's doing the same thing that he was unhappy with doing in Golden State. He's not. He's really not.
No, he would not be. I don't think he would be. And not only would Durant have the opportunity, so like if he goes to New York, then you have to go through the entire Eastern Conference to get to the Warriors, right?
Well, and like what, he gets New York to what, the playoffs?
Right.
Is Porzingis going to be the guy he was before injury? Like they're too far away. They're going in the right direction with Fizdale and all that, but like making it to the playoffs would be like, hey, they've really improved. Like that's not the point of the career that Durant's in. And maybe he goes to New York. I don't know. I don't know what he wants, but I don't know. They just seem far away to me.
One thing that we've always talked about a lot with LeBron and what we have talked about quite a bit with all of these superstars is that when they make their decision, it's pretty easy to go back and look at moments and look at the breadcrumbs, and you can kind of line up the breadcrumbs to find out how you got to a place. These breadcrumbs are kind of sort of lining up here, and it's hard to ignore it.
Do you remember like Magic being like, this year we're going to be back, and next year we're going to be back?
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't think Magic Johnson knows some things?
Right.
Like,
well, that's why, like, I found it so ridiculous that Durant was saying that he never got any text from LeBron. Like, Magic had a 2-hour meeting with LeBron, right? A reported 2-hour meeting. You don't think Durant came up? Like,
right, exactly. And both of their abilities to, like,
close the deal,
help deliver that, right?
Yeah.
Like, but they both play a role in the ability to deliver a guy like Kevin Durant. That's a powerful pitch, man. LeBron James and Magic Johnson saying, I want you, I would cry. Mm-hmm. You know, like, if those two dudes were like, I want you to join me to sweep my floors. Like, you know, like, so I don't know, man. Like, I feel like when Magic said things like that, like, I don't know.
Yeah,
a lot of breadcrumbs.
Lot of breadcrumbs. All right, that'll do it though for this episode and this week of the Locked On Lakers podcast. As always, before we go into the weekend, I like to remind you guys that I have a Mailbag Monday episode that I record Sunday nights. So get your questions in the form of a 5-star review, and I will answer those Sunday night. We have a fun show next Monday, I think, as well, with LeBron going back to Cleveland. So we have that lined up as well. So fun season so far. Thank you for those of you new listeners and stuff. It's been a lot of fun to watch this thing grow. Thanks for all of that. Pete, thanks for this. And I guess I'll see you in like an hour or so.
Sounds good.
All right. Have a good one, everybody.